ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman. This is the My View Matters Radio Network. Folks, I'm a little bit under the weather. I'm recovering from what seems to be a massive allergy attack that happened this weekend. I don't know what happened, but so if my voice gets a little scratchy or whatever, I apologize in advance. I've got a cup of warm coffee here trying to keep my throat lubricated, and hopefully that won't be a problem tonight. Lined up for the show tonight, my friend and favorite drug policy analyst, Daniel Williams, will be joining us to talk about the recent bump in marijuana talk. There's been a lot of talk about marijuana legalization and the various levels of it, and it seems to have some momentum behind it. And so I wanted to talk to Daniel to get his take on all this, because I don't know where it's all coming from. It's just very interesting that all of a sudden it's the topic du jour. And, of course, we did have the Farm Bill amendment that passed that allowed for educational research to be done on industrial hemp. It's not as good as what we have here in Kentucky as far as if the feds had legalized it, we were ready to go ahead and start producing. But it is the position that the Democrats actually had proposed, where it would give control to local universities to try to do research on the viability of the crop and all that jazz. So not perfect, but it's a step in the correct direction. And as long as the momentum keeps going that direction, that we may actually see industrial hemp someday. We'll see. But, I should give out the number. I always forget to do that, folks. If you'd like to call in tonight, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And, of course, your calls are always welcome. But if you call, you have to press the 1 key to let me know that you want to talk, because I'm not psychic. I don't know. If you're not on the board, I can't ring you in. That's one of the funny things about it. And sometimes it's a little bit slow to show that people have called in. So if you call in and I'm just gabbing away, please be patient and, press that 1 key if you want to talk, and that'll. So getting to a couple things here first while we wait on our guest. We have Steve Beshear finally called a special session for the redistricting. And essentially, the redistricting has been an issue here in the state for 2 years. And we had the districts put in place. They were declared unconstitutional, rolled back to the unconstitutional district, which was crazy. And now we have a judge, three-judge panel, federal panel, has ruled that if the legislature fails to get it done this time, that they will act and they will create the district. So the good news for voters, potential candidates, and the process in general is that if the legislature fails, we do have a proverbial or a non-literal gun to their head that they will get new districts one way or the other next year, and that's a good thing. I'm very excited about that. What I've been told is that originally the special session was slated for September. In light of the ruling that came out, Beshear has called a special session for August 19th. He did that just before the case was heard, and I think they were hoping that the federal case would be dismissed if they promised to have the special session, but that was not the case, thankfully. So basically we have the General Assembly is going in August 19th to work on this, and if they fail again, then the federal courts will carve districts. So one way or the other, we're going to get to that one man, one vote threshold, finally, only 2 years late. And hopefully there won't be much craziness around going back and forth as we had a couple of years ago, which caused a lot of candidates to lose seats that were running for open seats or what should have been open seats, and then ended up being redistricted back to non-open seats and couldn't run for their previous office because that filing deadline had passed. What a mess that was. And I see that we have our guest on the phone here, and I'm going to bring him on now. Daniel, how you doing?
Pretty good, Ken. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing real well. Folks, for those of you that don't know Daniel Williams is the author of Naked Truth on Drugs, He is my go-to guy when it comes to drug policy. As many people have heard, you know, I'm maybe the only libertarian state chairman in history who has never done an illegal drug. But whenever I have a question about drug policy and drug effects and anything drug-related, I always tap Daniel first. And always a pleasure to talk to you, Daniel. You're well-versed in what the heck's going on, and that's kind of why I brought you on. We have all this stuff on Facebook especially, but it, just in general, this momentum towards marijuana legalization, and a lot of talk about how the cost is finally coming into conversation about all this, and I think we're moving in the right direction, and that's why I wanted to bring you on. So do you have anything you would like to start out with?
Well, I appreciate coming back on the show. It's always a pleasure. And you're right, there has been an uptick in mainstream media news about marijuana, and you know, it's actually been more positive than negative. So there is some definite trending going. Hello?
Yeah, you're here.
Hello? Oh, I kept I'm sorry, I kept hearing a couple beeps in my.
Okay,
go
ahead.
Okay. Anyway, like I said, there's been an uptick, and a lot of it's been good news. So, as usual, the politicians are, you know, way behind the general public by, you know, 5 to 10 years. But the situation that we have in Colorado and Washington have pretty much remained unchanged since their laws were voted on. Colorado is the better example because, as many of your listeners know, they made an amendment to their constitution. So it's a pretty ironclad law that would take 60% of the public to repeal it. So that's a pretty good deal, and it's going to take effect around December. So the government continues as of a week ago saying that they're not ready to make a statement regarding Colorado and Washington, which can be a good sign or a bad sign. Keep in mind that the federal government in cahoots with, you know, ambitious district attorneys and the DEA and SWAT are still raiding and busting up and putting in jail people who are running legitimate dispensaries in California. So it's kind of a mixed bag of what's going on. The general hope is that the Department of Justice will turn pretty much a blind eye to what's going on in Colorado and Washington. And given the current difficulties that President Obama is having, there's some talk that it's just not even on his radar screen. So his inaction would be somewhat applauded, but it would be better if he would take a positive approach to it and settle the question.
Well, you and I had talked before the show and kind of geared it, you know, in preparation for the show, and when I asked to come on, and I talked to some others too. You know, you mentioned the DEA and the DOJ, and you know, something that I see here is that there's immense pressure from state and local governments as well, because there's a lot of money involved in this. I mean, millions and millions and millions of dollars just here in Kentucky.
There's no question. There are great vested interests in the continued prohibition of not just marijuana, but the prohibition of all drugs in general. Big money.
Yeah, well, I know, and for instance, a friend of mine, when he was in the National Guard, his stateside duty for the National Guard was to fly around in helicopters looking for marijuana in the state of Kentucky. That was one of the big concerns with our hemp bill that was passed last year, was that the state police were worried that the feds were going to cut us out of the enforcement dollars, the grant money that they get from the feds. And I think that that's something that plays a big role here, and it's kind of a dual-sided thing. You've got the bureaucracy, and I've talked about this on the show numerous times. Bureaucracy is all about protecting their turf, their little fiefdom, and growing it, and that's all they want to do, and that's what they do. By contrast, you have the public, which is kind of reaching a point of, hey, we need to spend less money. Hey, you know, marijuana, whatever. And they're kind of reaching the point of, hey, why do we still do this?
Well, the most all of your polls that have been taken in the past 6 to 12 months show a consistent majority of folks in America think that marijuana should be legal, or at minimum there should be no crime associated with its use. So you're seeing that the public is on board. But you touched a good point about the state and local police departments who rely upon the federal funding for the drug war, and a lot of that money is actually in gross dollars is involved with marijuana. So if the federal government were to turn off the spigot, you would see state and local, well, more so state than local governments, really seriously consider the legalization, because they won't have the funding ability to continue the war. So that would be one of the quickest ways to expedite legalization in relatively quick order, is if the federal government would just turn off the money spigot.
Yeah, I know, you know, some libertarians, different types of libertarians, of course, but one brand of libertarianism anyway, specifically advocates just leaving it to the states to do this. And I think that anyone who thinks through the process for very long realizes that the states are not going to be able to spend like the federal government does on specifically marijuana and some of the lesser nasty stuff. I mean, you'll probably still have people going after meth, and we've talked about that. We can get the meth and those nasty bastard drugs, as they are. And I think that that's where you're going to see a shift, is you're actually going to see a shift towards the real nasty stuff. And at the end of the day, these officers, you know, the law enforcement agencies are still going to want to protect their fiefdom and justify it. So they're going to shift off to really thoroughly enforcing actual real crime, you know, property crimes, assaults, things like that, which I think everybody would agree that's a good thing.
Well, there are studies after study that shows that the focus on drug interdiction and the drug war has been to the detriment of solving more pressing and more socially ruinous crimes. So, yeah, the drug's been a pretty easy target. But what you will see, if again, to get back to my point of the federal government turning off the spigot for marijuana enforcement, that would be the first step in the dismantling of drug prohibition across the board. Because when they're no longer able to fund their drug programs, it's the marijuana dollars, but it goes into the cocaine pot and everything else. So you'll see states having to come to terms with the overall aspect of drug prohibition, and unless the federal government can do something to convince them otherwise, I think we're going to have de facto repeal of drug prohibition in a relatively short period of time. I know that's kind of a bold statement, you know, making heroin legal again as it once was, but I think if you look at the economics and the dynamics, that could be one surprising and positive byproduct of ending marijuana prohibition.
Well, and I think the reason marijuana gets so much focus, you know, and I like you, believe that it all should be legal, not because I want to go out and do it, but because it's, you know, individual choice, and I don't like government making individual choices that supposedly protect people from themselves. But I think the reason marijuana gets focused on so much is that, I mean, I think everybody has seen someone, or most everyone's seen someone that's under the influence of marijuana sometime in their adult life. And, you know, the reality is that marijuana users are not violent. You know, the only people who have to
unless they're liquored up. You have to throw
right, but that's a compounding factor there.
You're right.
You know, the only person who has to watch out when it comes to people that are high on marijuana is the guy that's holding the box of Twinkies. I mean,
right,
seriously,
exactly.
You know. The reality is that the only thing getting destroyed there is a pound of Twinkies, and I guess my point is that's kind of why I think marijuana is the focus, is that everyone has seen that it doesn't cause people to be crazy or violent. I mean, we've all heard the stories from the 80s and 90s of PCP users being, you know, crazy and violent and out of control and superhuman strength and all those stories and whatever. And cocaine people, like, going crazy or whatever. But, you know, and I think a lot of that's probably FUD. I don't know that that's necessarily
sensationalistic claims were later disputed, but they were buried on page 6. They weren't headlines. But it was all pretty much bunk and crap. Crack babies and
yeah,
all that kind of stuff. It was bullshit.
Right.
Oh, excuse me.
Well, but the point is that, Yeah, I don't have a beat button, so, you know, it happens. The point is that we have, what, 40 years under our belt plus of the war on drugs. You and I have talked about this
before. Yeah, the intensification of it, absolutely, yeah.
Right, and since Nixon declared a war on drugs, which any time we've declared a war on anything that wasn't another country has cost us an absolute fortune, and I don't know that we've won one yet. We haven't won the war on poverty. We haven't won the war on terror. We haven't won the war on drugs. I can't think of any war on whatever that isn't another country that we've won. We spent a lot of money on it, though.
We certainly do. And so back to your theme about the about pot getting a lot of notice and what's on the short-term horizon and farther down the road. Is a lot of the people in drug policy, I follow a lot of them on Facebook and the like and Twitter, and you know, there's a lot of speculation on what Obama will do in the balance of his term with regard specifically, you know, to marijuana. And some of the arguments are that, well, he's getting battered on all of these other scandals and issues, and the polls have shown that the millennials are the support for millennials are just dropping like flies. So there's one avenue of thought that he'll to placate and honor along the promise, he'll take marijuana out of Schedule One or put it in Schedule Three or Schedule Four, and that would be a wonderful thing because the states would move forward that are kind of holding back now and seeing that the federal government isn't going to come down on a ton of bricks. You'll see more states go for the same type of legalization as Colorado, adults in 21. But, you know, the other thing, the other issue is why should he do anything? He might not do anything because he's, for the same reasons, he's so screwed up in the polls, he doesn't see as how this would be a positive deal. I've read some other things where the Democrats, specific to this issue, but more broadly, they're wishing that he would do something in a positive way because he's not, said he's not blazing much of a trail for Hillary, whoever it may be, in 2016. So he's under pressure from a lot of people. It would be great if he would take marijuana out of Schedule 1 and put it in Schedule 4. It would be even better if he decided to put that particular drug back to the issues and make it an issue for the states. You know, it's really hard to say, but if it doesn't happen, if he doesn't do anything, that's where most people are kind of freaking out, is if he doesn't do anything at all. Because some people feel that even some of my more left-leaning friends, but my right-leaning friends that are involved with this issue, they believe that the Republican candidate in 2016 might have a pretty good chance of winning the White House based upon Obama's record and so many failures, and that it'll be out of reach for a much longer period of time. So where it's going, I'm hoping that Obama can do a couple of the things that either eliminate the problem or pave the way for the elimination, because I'm not so sure the Democrats will retain the White House in 2016, and I'm not sure they'll keep the Senate in 2014.
Hang on one second. I want to rewind to something you said before you go on, because you mentioned how marijuana is a Schedule One drug right now. And I think that's important for some of our listeners that may not understand how that scheduling works. Schedule 1 is supposed to be for highly addictive, no medicinal purpose drugs. And basically it's the most destructive of drugs, right? But in Schedule 2, which is approved for medicinal use, you have heroin, cocaine, opiates, cocaine, you know, all the things that – actually, and opiates right now, especially in Kentucky, are one of the two large, ugly things going on. And a lot of this is being driven by accidental addiction. People get addicted to the pills on accident.
What the schedule is saying is that the federal government officially believes that cocaine is more dangerous than marijuana. Schedule 1 is for the worst of the worst, and marijuana is right up there with heroin. Heroin is a Schedule 1 drug. And so is marijuana. So the enforcement of those two prohibitions are identical because Schedule One carries certain mandatory things that just, you know, don't apply. So the federal government thinks cocaine is less problematic than marijuana. So yeah, there are just so many examples like that that just make your head spin. But I wanted to get into one other aspect. That's kind of how I see things moving down the road. But and with your point of more press for marijuana lately, the Reaper Madness is still out there. There's your listeners may be aware of it, but there's this new group that's formed. It's called SAM, and it stands for Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And it was formed in January of this year. They're anti-pot, obviously. And the two people on that started it, Kevin Sabat, he served as a senior advisor for drug policy at White House at the UNDCP. So he's a drug warrior. But his partner is Patrick Kennedy, you know, of the Kennedys, the congressman up there who's, you know, very, very familiar with narcotic use and a frequent guest to rehab programs. They're the ones that have started Project SAM, and it's called Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And it's like it's been a turd in the punch bowl. They made a big push in the very beginning and expecting that they would have the clues for keeping pot illegal, and they haven't been heard from since. But I wonder if I got a minute, I'm going to tell you another quick story about Reefer Madness. And this one's coming from our side of the table. There was this guy, his name was Jamin Shively. You may have heard of him, but anyway, Jamin Shively. He was a corporate strategy manager formerly at Microsoft. And he came out in the past few weeks, and he was going to launch the first retail brand of America for the United States. He was going to be the marijuana baron. He was going to win the largest market share for marijuana in the U.S. And he got the former president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, he got him to come onto his plan, but sign on to his plan. So he was going to create this brand name for this pot. And, you know, there's a lot of brand names like Sour Diesel, Misty Haze, all those kind of names. So he named his pot Diego Pellicer, for some ancestral type of thing. But that's his brand. Instead of Coke, it's like Diego Pellicer. And like I said, he got Vicente Fox on board. And what he was going to do was that when marijuana was legal everywhere, but especially in California and Washington, he was going to have a joint partnership with Vicente Fox to grow all the pot in Mexico, export it into the United States, and he was going to be the distributor. Plus, he was going to sell this pot. He was going to retail all of his Diego doobies for $40 a gram, Kenny. $40 a gram. That comes out to over $1,100 an ounce, and there isn't any pot in the world on this planet that is worth $1,100 an ounce. So he was very delusional. He thought that he was going to do this, going to have the Mexicans grow it. He was going to bring it into the country and sell it and get the dominant market share. Now, fortunately or rightfully, the marijuana media just skewered this guy, called him a lunatic, and they lambasted him and just thought he was a complete idiot. And he hasn't been heard from since either. But here's a guy who has a lot of money and decides that he's going to rule the pot world by importing pot from Mexico. I mean, he's supposed to be on our side. If you think about it, he was going to bring the pot in from Mexico. Now, how do you think if we legalize pot in the United States, how long do you think the U.S. growing lobby will keep foreign pot out of our country, you know, like forever?
Oh, sure.
So this guy doesn't really think it through. And what makes it, I'm going to finish up with this part, but what makes it even more ridiculous is this Mr. Shively guy. He's a pretty recent convert to smoking pot. He's already been smoking it for like 18 months, and this is a quote in the article. He said he's gone from an entrepreneur to an advocate to an activist, seriously. And I'm like, seriously, man? Seriously, dude? This is a guy that I wrote about in my book when I said drugs aren't for everyone. This guy should not be doing drugs. But so here's a guy from our side, just as crazy as the guys from the other side. And I thought that was a pretty interesting comment on the marijuana business. But I'm hopeful that things will move forward in a positive and not too slow fashion.
Well, and I think that that's something the free market kind of ends up deciding. And whether it's industrial hemp or medical marijuana or full-blown marijuana legalization specifically, I think that's something that the free market dictates. I mean, it may be, you know, just like a Cuban cigar, right? Now, part of the reason Cuban cigars cost so much is because they're really hard to get here. But in theory, they're better cigars. And I think that maybe that guy could do, you know, a specialty brand or something at $1,100. I don't know what the prices are, but
never,
apparently that's expensive.
It's never going to happen, man. You know, it's never going to happen, Ken. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's just never going to happen,
right?
Because there, I don't think there's going to be an illegal – I think the state of growing high-grade marijuana is about as sophisticated as it's going to get. There might be another 1 or 2 percentages of THC to eke out of a super hybrid. But the highest quality of grillable pot is about where we are right now. And none of it sells for over $1,000 an ounce. So just on the face of it, of him selling this stuff at $40 a gram, and it was going to be Mexican weed. I mean, Mexican weed has probably the worst reputation in the marijuana market of anything, and he thought he could sell it for $40 a gram. But, you know... It's just that we got our own crazies. And I mean, that's a good sign, because if somebody like this can get out there and say something completely foolish and make a fool of themselves and granted not be heard from again, at least there is some – this would have been, you know, unthinkable, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. So there is some value to him being an idiot, but he's not going to sell Mexican pot for $40 a gram. I don't think he's going to get a toehold into the business. But make no mistake, there will be several billion-dollar cannabis companies in and out. Once legalization is pretty much established across the country, you're going to see some businesses do very well. But again, when they start to talk about the taxes and the revenue, we must remember that pot right now is selling in the illegal market for anywhere from high-grade pot anywhere from $4,000 to $6,000 a gram, or $4,000 to $6,000 a pound. In a legal market, that pot is going to cost $500 to grow. So all of these numbers that are bandied about how rich the marijuana business is going to be, I don't see any of them placing discounts in there on the legal price. They're all making assumptions based upon current market value, and I think we're going to be, you know, a big surprise when we realize it's not as big as we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and I had seen some information about that coming out of Colorado or Washington or somewhere about essentially just that, right, that the revenues that were expected, the tax revenues were actually, they think, overinflated. They don't think they're really going to bring in as much as promoted. But it's really not that indifferent from, for instance, in Ohio or anywhere else where they legalize gambling. And they always come up with these crazy pie-in-the-sky, oh, look at all the money it's going to bring in. And, you know, yeah, I guess for some people, justifying it through, hey, look at all the extra tax money we're bringing in, works for some folks. You know, me personally, I'm not concerned about the tax money per se. I'm more worried about the liberty aspect of who cares. Why are we involved in somebody else's personal decisions? And, you know, I think that that's a growing attitude. And I've looked at some of these polls, and you see that, you know, the support literally – it starts out with the millennials, and it's very high, and then it goes down, and it kind of staircases down as you go into the older and older generations. And that 80-plus generation is still at, like, only 20 or 30% support for legalization.
Right.
But, you know, the millennials are up around 70 or something like that. So I really think this is a generational shift thing that, you know, and I don't mean to put it quite so bluntly, but as more people, as the elderly folks die off and quit voting, I think we're going to see this come one way or the other. It's really just a matter of, for the states, putting things in a place where they're ready to rock and roll, much like what we had here in Kentucky with the hemp bill that we had, where they have it basically set up that, hey, if industrial hemp becomes legal, we got a framework already in place, licensing procedure, inspection procedure, all that stuff's already ready to go, and all they have to do is legalize it, and we can grow day one. You know, that's... I think what the next step probably is going to be for some of these states that don't have the guts to come out and do the full-blown legalization is going to be, hey, we'll put a framework in place, and this is how we're going to do it if it happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of what-if type of plans in most state houses that are looking at this. They may not make it a public type of deal, but they're all looking at some type of legalization scheme, especially if the federal dollars dry up. But it could happen. It really all depends upon what direction comes out of the White House. I know that people say these are grassroots issues, but it really does require presidential action, presidential direction. And he really does have the ability to end marijuana prohibition before he finishes breakfast tomorrow. And it's just one of the most egregious outrages of his presidency that he is a former heavy user of marijuana, and as recently as the last White House Correspondents' Dinner, he very cavalierly joked about how he enjoyed all of his stoner days. Well, literally at the same time he was making those comments, you know, ten young people got arrested for the nonviolent possession of marijuana. So it's just an absolute. It is beyond shame that this man has not done what he could easily do, and it would be no skin off his nose. So it's quite a wonderment out there why he hasn't done anything, because you can't figure out what he's got to lose. All you can do is look at what he's got to win. But you're right, there's a tremendous amount of pressure from the private sector, the unions, the private business. There is a lot of pushback on any attempts to legalize pot. So I don't know who he's listening to, but it's quite a disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, he's the head of the executive branch, and so while he may not be able to, you know, effectively change the legislation and really reschedule marijuana, what he could do is basically give the direction to the Department of Justice, the DEA, all those. I mean, he's the head administrator of the country, and he can give the direction that says, yeah, stop doing that now. And that's well within his powers to do. You know, and certainly Congress could come up and then try to impeach him for it. But the reality is that I don't think that would survive, and that would not be something – with all the other scandals that Obama is currently surviving, I don't think that any of that type of stuff would if they can't get him on the stuff that's pretty nasty that's out there already, I really don't see this issue being the one that does him in.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, here in Kentucky, obviously, we're in the South, and we're a little slower to change. I mean, that's just kind of how the South works, and that's okay. But here in the South, even I've got a poll here. It shows 65% support for industrial hemp, 60% support for medical marijuana, and 40% support for full blown legalization.
I read that. It was
a shifting thing.
Very, very good. Yeah.
And that's a change. I mean, that's a change for the past 4 or 5 years. And I think we're going the right direction here in the state. Again, as the generations turn over and the voters change, I see this going that direction. But I guess the point is that it's going to happen, and it's really going to be a matter in for those politicians out there. And we have one here in Kentucky in particular that's latched onto this issue and has championed it. But
the
who's
hemp
going to
issue
be the
or
one
the pot issue?
Is
he championing the hemp or pot?
He's pushing medical marijuana. So,
okay.
And for a state like Kentucky, that's a pretty big risk. And it's interesting how that came out. I mentioned at the beginning of the show about our redistricting debacle. And basically this guy got redistricted into another person's district and decided he wasn't going to run for office again. And so he came out in favor of legalizing marijuana and introduced the Gatewood Galbraith Memorial Medical Marijuana Act. And everyone, I think, that listens to the show knows who Gatewood Galbraith is, longtime legacy guy here in Kentucky. The point being that then all of a sudden they undid the districts. He was back, and he was an incumbent, no challenger from the Democratic side, and he said, hey, I guess I'll run again. So he decided to run again. He drew a Republican challenger as a result of a couple of different things, and he survived. And the Republican made a huge deal out of the marijuana issue. And this politician, his name's Perry Clark, he survived. And I think that shows that politicians who are in the right demographic can justify it the right way and can do a little bit of education on the issue. And especially on the medical side, it should be an absolute no-brainer. There's no reason for the government to ever step in between the doctor and the patient, ever. Ever, and I think everyone agrees with that, that it just takes some guts to stand up and do it. And I think this is not that far away everywhere, and it's just a matter of, does that happen first, or is it just the full-blown legalization and we're done?
Now, this fellow that stood up for the medical aspect of PAC, did he win? Has it been contested yet?
Did
he pay a price for it, or what?
He won. He did win re-election, and he's continued to advocate the bill. And I'm sure it'll be reintroduced in the next session, and so he's pushing.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I haven't seen any instances where a candidate, whether it's a state office or a national office, who has lost specifically because he endorsed either medical marijuana or legalization of marijuana itself. I don't think that's a losing issue, but like you said, more and more politicians need to take that public stand, because everybody seemingly to date has been rewarded, or at least not punished, for making that stand. So I'd love to see, personally, what I would love to see, I would love to see the Republicans steal this issue, the legalization issue, away from the Democrats, and use it to help them, more balance the scales that they say are out of whack with the young people and Hispanics and the like. If they could steal the Democrats' thunder on this, it would certainly be a game changer. And I would think that the Republicans, whoever did it, if they didn't do it nationally, but just did it regionally or on a statewide basis, I think they would suffer. They wouldn't suffer. They would end up with a net plus of supporters for coming out for that. And there's where some courage needs to be taken. But I would really like to see that happen and just catch the Democrats flat-footed.
Yeah, well, it would definitely, like we've talked about, it would pick up that millennial support. I mean, this is one of the key issues between this and, hey, I got a college degree and I can't get a job. One of the key issues for millennials, and between this, the gay marriage issue, and the job issue, the fact there are no jobs, I think are really probably the three key issues for millennials in general at this point. So if you want to win an election going forward, go ahead.
Yeah, you have to deal with the millennial. My son is a millennial. I understand this completely. And I was just watching one of the news shows this afternoon, where they were talking about millennial support for President Obama. They didn't mention the hit that had been taken because of the drug issue, specifically the NSA spying. And they said millennial support had dropped 17% since they started polling them about the NSA spying, which is a little unusual because, privacy means a lot different to that generation than it does to ours. But even 17% of them, thought it was too much of a Big Brother thing. So he's bleeding all over the place, and with the millennials, he could curry their favor by doing some smart things with marijuana. But until then, Colorado's the place to be. Washington is the second best place to be. But it'll be interesting come December when the actual retail operations, if they're allowed to open up on time according to the Constitution, but that's when the stores will be open and people will be buying legal pot, which would be very exciting times for not only the people who smoke pot, but for a lot of people who think that it's dumb for it to be against the law. I think it's a win-win deal. Amsterdam's going to lose, though.
What's that?
I said Amsterdam is going to lose out because Amsterdam is the Mecca. That's where everybody goes to get legally high. And so that should be interesting. But, yeah. I'm hopeful. I'm only 63. Actually, today's my birthday, so I'm certain that this is going to happen in my lifetime, and I'm pretty excited to see it happen. So that's what I got going.
Yeah. Well, I certainly appreciate you coming on, Daniel. I mean, if you got, I definitely am way over on a break, but I definitely did want to stop the conversation because I always enjoy having you on. You always provide good insight, stuff that I don't really, like I said, I don't follow that particular issue very closely. It's doing what I do. I have to follow everything a little bit. So, and then I just bring in experts on the particular issues that are hot because, well, that's, I would, my brain would explode if I knew everything.
Well, I appreciate you bringing me in tonight and giving me so much of your time. I really didn't mean to take so much of it up, but I appreciate it. It was fun. It's always stimulating to talk with you, Kenny.
No, I certainly appreciate it. And, you know, anytime you want to call into the show, you're always welcome. And I certainly appreciate you coming on and taking the time to bring this issue to our listeners. So, Daniel, thank you very, very much. And I'm going to put you back in the hold queue. And, folks, we're going to take a break here. And when we get back, we've got a handful of other topics to talk about. So stay tuned. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network.
Victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
advertisers. Here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled and the My View Matters Radio Network, and we went long in our last segment with Daniel Williams, which is fine because we always enjoy hearing from Daniel. He's always in touch with what's going on in the drug world as far as policy goes. Anyhow, getting back to some more Kentucky local issues here, one of the things that seems to be gearing up is, again, the push for a smoking ban statewide. I've been interviewed twice in the past week, and there's been a number of stories printed, and, of course, they had their little meeting down in the Health and Wellness Committee, of which, of course, no one who's against the ban is ever invited to participate. And so this is going to be back again. The folks that push the bans get millions of dollars every year to push this stuff. Usually the money comes off of Obama's stimulus, which, because there hasn't been a budget passed, and it's a continuing resolution, they just keep funding where it was the previous year, keeps the stimulus alive. And that's part of where these guys get their money, is it's basically second and third hand from, well, second and third hand, no pun intended, from the Obama stimulus money that keeps coming in. So, you know, your tax dollars continue to push small businesses around and make them have to do things that they don't want to do. And the reality is, as I've told many of the people that have talked to me about this issue, including the two interviews this week, which I know the one didn't quote it, but the reality is we do not need a smoking ban on a local level. People have smoking bans, and they can have them if they want them, I guess. I personally think it's stupid, and generally speaking, like the one here in Kenton County up in northern Kentucky that we fought, at the end of the day, they forced a whopping 12 establishments or so to go smoke-free. It was like 11 restaurants and a bowling alley. And the reality is we just don't need these things. And to me, it's offensive to push this onto a small business owner. By now, everyone's quite aware of the risks of exposure to smoke, and it's up to individuals to make those decisions. The reality is, and I've got a story here, that they finally start to get into what they're really pushing here. What they're pushing is, it has nothing to do with health or health of employees or any of that stuff, which they always come around and, oh, it's for the children. They like to say that a lot. The reality is it has nothing to do with that. What this has to do with, plain and simple, is behavior modification. They believe that if they can take smoking out of the public realm, that it will cause children to not see smoking and therefore not smoke. Now, they always also then claim that this is not saying you can't smoke, we're just asking you to take it outside. But these same people are the ones that then institute bans on entire outside areas as well, and push for sidewalk bans and push for bans that are ever increasing in size in apartment complexes and condos and all that stuff. And the point is that these folks are not worried about health. Despite what they say, it's not about health. These people are literally morally offended that people smoke. Their goal is to make it so that it is socially abnormal to smoke. That's their goal. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's what they're trying to do. So the problem I have with it is that up until recently, these folks have been lying and saying that it's all about the immediate health effects. It's all about, oh, we've got to immediately stop. Oh, well, it's a miracle cure. You take a smoking ban, and all of a sudden, hospitals don't see any patients about emphysema and smoke anymore, and no sudden asthma attacks. It's all BS, and everybody knows it. You can manipulate data any which way you want, but the reality is their goal is social engineering, plain and simple. Social engineering is their goal, and I reject all forms of social engineering because social engineering takes away from the rights of individuals to do as they so choose with themselves and with their property. That is my objection to the smoking ban. It's not that I want people to smoke. It's not that I want to proliferate smoke to everyone. It's that I, as an individual, should be allowed to choose. You, as an individual, should be allowed to choose. You, as a small business owner, should be allowed to choose. And if I don't like, I, the consumer, don't like what you, the small business owner, is doing, guess what? I don't have to go into your establishment. Nothing puts a gun to my head or a knife to my throat and makes me walk into a smoking establishment, period. Period. That's the point. I am for individual liberty and freedom. These folks are for social engineering and control. That is why I fight them. And yes, smoking is a very difficult subject to defend. And I get that all the time from people. Why are you defending smoking? Smoking's bad, blah, 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 blah. Absolutely. It's not good for you. What do most people die from in a fire? Smoke inhalation. I do not debate the health effects of tobacco usage. I don't care what they are, though. And that's really what it comes down to. I, as an individual, make the choice. You, as an individual, make the choice. It's your job to take care of yourself. Once you are a legal adult, it's your job to take care of yourself. And you are responsible for the consequences of your own decisions. Period. Anyway, I didn't want to get on too deep of a tangent on that because we do have a few other things to get to here. You had an interesting story that I saw. Excuse me. I apologize, folks. Again, I'm a little bit under the weather here this week. Things that eight foods that we eat in the U.S. that are banned in other countries. Food dyes, olestra. Remember the olestra stuff with the whole fake oil that can't be digested and causes interesting bowel problems? Yeah, that's banned in a lot of other countries. Bromated vegetable oil, which makes food dyes stick to liquid, and but has also been linked to birth defects and major organ damage. Potassium bromate, which is apparently great for impatient bakers, as they say, but bad for your kidneys and nervous system. Is that all? I can't even say this word. Azotocarbamide. Azodicarbonamide. Yes, something close to that. It bleaches flour, plastic, and induces asthma as an added bonus. I love the quotes on these. BHA and BHT, the waxy preservatives linked to cancer. Synthetic growth hormones, which are used in our livestock, RBGH and RBST. Banned in other countries. They do make cows bulk up, but those hormones get passed through. It's not like the hormones only are in the digestive tract and then out they go. I mean, that wouldn't help grow a cow. Like any other drug that one takes, it goes throughout the body, and our BGH and that is still in the beef that we eat. So that's also found in other places. Arsenic, which is in poultry, and is used as a preservative. So those are just things that are in our food supply that are not good for us. And not that I'm saying I want to ban on those things at all. Personally, I'm all for labeling. Hey, you know what? This contains this. And hey, you know what? If I care, cool. And if I don't, cool. Again, it's individual responsibility. I just want to know. That's all. Right? I mean, is this natural or is it unnatural? And if it's unnatural, what'd you do to it? Pretty straightforward information that I think is good for consumers to know. And then I then am empowered to make the decision one way or the other. Heading out around the country, Colorado has successfully submitted a petition to recall one of the anti-gun senators. Those that are following this in the Second Amendment movement, obviously Colorado made some moves to do some serious gun control stuff. And as a result, the more rural parts of the state are furious about it and are subjecting this particular candidate to a recall. Now, in the past, it was generally given that if there was a recall effort and it was successful in getting it onto the ballot, the rule of thumb was that that candidate would lose in the recall, which would commonly cause the candidate who is being recalled to just drop out completely and say, you know what, I resign, I'm done. And that was a pretty common thing in the past. Really, the big example of when that changed was the Scott Walker situation in Wisconsin. Probably the biggest and latest example of where a recall failed. But certainly a place where I know what I'm trying to say. It's still interesting, and we'll see how that comes out. It'll be interesting to see how the constituents of this particular person stand for that. Now, I wanted to get to a few things on the Fourth Amendment stuff, the drones, the NSA spying, all that stuff going on. And we only have a few minutes left, but basically the FBI has now admitted that they're using drones for surveillance on U.S. turf, in U.S. skies. You have more whistleblowers coming out and talking about the extent of the NSA plans and what they're doing. You have the scandal continues to get wider. One of the interesting things is that while Bush was still president, the NSA was tapping Obama's phone and email and all that stuff, which is absolutely hilarious. And I have to wonder if Obama himself now is even second-guessing this and figuring out how to back off of where he was when he was defending the plan. I wonder how he feels about being spied on himself. I mean, that's pretty crazy. That just because he's a senator, and that's the other thing that's coming out, is that we're finding out that the NSA was spying on our elected officials. What? I mean, that's insane. Our elected officials certainly are not the ones we should be worried about in any war on terror. But again, and I've talked to people about this, the NSA, there was a discussion on Facebook I saw about this, and somebody was saying the NSA is fighting for us. We're not the enemy. And there was a big discussion and argument around it. And I said, no, my answer is we are the enemy. We, individuals, collectively, can come together and put politicians into office who will scale back the NSA's breadth, right? We can scale them back. We can force them to stop doing what they're doing. We're the only ones who can do that. A foreign enemy, a domestic terrorist, they're not the ones that are going to be reeling the NSA back in, cutting their budgets, telling it, hey, you're not allowed to do that. The real enemy to us, the people, is not able to do that to the NSA. We, the people, the citizens of this country, do have that power. And so in a way, because the NSA, like any bureaucracy, as I said before, is the goal of that bureaucracy is to grow and protect its fiefdom, right? Its budget, its power, all that stuff. That's their goal. That's any bureaucracy. We're the enemy to them. We're the ones who can take that away from them. And if you don't believe that, think about it. Think about it a little more. Who has the power to threaten the scope of NSA spying? Who has that power? It's not the bad guys. Nobody overseas. Not illegal aliens, which I couldn't get to that story tonight, unfortunately. It's us. We're the enemy of their bureaucracy, of their fiefdom. It's us. We're their enemy. Scary thought, huh? Yeah. And that's why they're spying on state senators and state reps and U.S. senators and U.S. reps, because they're the enemy. They're the ones who can cut the funding. It's got to stop somewhere. Innocent until proven guilty has got to be brought back. Secure in possession has got to be brought back. Due process has to be brought back. These secret courts cannot be allowed to go on. Rand Paul has introduced a Fourth Amendment, reviving the Fourth Amendment Act or something like that, and I only have a few seconds left here, but I applaud him for that. That's what we need. We have to get our rights back. It's a shame that he has to propose a bill like that at all. I mean, really? We have to propose a bill to get our rights back that are supposed to be constitutionally protected? That seems counterintuitive, but that's where we're at. So, you know, I don't know what else to tell you, folks, but we got to keep fighting. We are the enemy, I guess, to the bureaucracy, but we're not the enemy to ourselves. Work together. We can stop government abuse. We can get control of this government. Folks, you have a good week. I'll see you next week, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, My View Matters Radio Network. Ken Molman signing off. Have a good night.